Welcome back to Raw Thoughts. Today I have Michael Porsche with us. Local dude, came from San Diego. He was a San Diego firefighter. Just happens that back-to-back podcast are firefighters coming into the world of the industry in real estate and rentals. So Michael, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, man. I just got to say, I love your intro. That was like so smooth. Oh, and I'm just hearing your voice. I feel like it's just so natural. I love it. It makes me feel super like, this is cool.
Thank you. Thank you. I am doing something right in my life.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. So a little bit about myself. I grew up in California, raised in Thousand Oaks. I was raised in a single parent home with my mom, and I was one out of five kids. So it was a really busy household. But that was a lot of fun, and had the opportunity to really had some good role models in my life and acknowledge my uncle, or both my uncles, actually. One was in both first responders. One was a sheriff. The other one was a fireman. And I was like, well, which one do I do? I watch Bad Boys, and that sounded pretty cool. And then I watch, you know, some firefighters up in the hills, because at the time, my surrounding area in the valley was always on fire. I was like, well, that sounds really cool, too.
Yeah.
But yeah, just that you mentioned on the firefighter word, I went down that path since I was a kid. Did a lot of training for it through high school and medical stuff. I had the opportunity to kind of really figure out if this is still what I wanted to do, and I ended up going back to it, which was pretty cool. But yeah, I started working for the city of San Diego when I was 25, and worked for them for about 5 years. And I met my wife when I was down there, and have had our first child in San Diego, and now we have one other on the way. But
wow,
say things are a little more simpler now, and in the suburbs of Boise, Idaho.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me, you have five siblings.
Yes.
Youngest, oldest, where do you fall in the realm of them?
Man, second to the bottom. So my oldest brother, Joshua, him and Julius, back to back. In fact, it's kind of a funny story. My the name I was born with was Shabani Lee.
Ooh.
Yeah. I'm so glad that didn't stick.
Yep. I'm
but the funny story is my brothers were the one that named me Michael. And so for some reason, like, my father, he named me Shabani Lee, like the yogurt,
yep,
if you will.
Yep.
And but no one called me that. My brothers just called me Michael, and
they're like, Dad, we can't say that.
Yeah.
We can't pronounce that.
Exactly. I'm just gonna name Michael, and we have no idea why. They're about 5 years older than I am, but no idea why till today. But that just stuck. And then when I was three, I think it officially got changed. But yeah, it was them, me, my two brothers, and then my two sisters. I have one older sister and one younger sister. So,
how do you think that played a role growing up? Single mom.
Oh, man.
You have all those siblings living in California. Like, what was that like?
It was crazy, I will say that. A lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. My two brothers were like, they would just cause chaos. So much chaos. They'd be running around the house. I'd be running around the house, you know, running away from them, not wanting to get beat up, you know. But
ooh, do I have stories about that?
Right? It was crazy. There was a lot of broken things in the house. The broken windows, broken desks, broken beds. Sorts of things. Yeah. Everything you can think of. And, you know, I'd say, oh man, my sisters, I don't know how they turned out so well, but, I think being around the boys definitely was may have been good in some ways, but at the same time, you know, they aren't so delicate. I'd say that's probably because of my brothers.
Yeah. The resiliency that they had to stick up for themselves. Yeah. I mean, I was the youngest of two older sisters, and you talk about, you know, stuff getting thrashed around the house. I mean, those two, I have to tell you the story because they will love me for it. So my mom, right, she was a single mom. We were living with my grandma, unloading dishes. My two older sisters thought it would be a really fun idea to chase me around the house with knives. And like, you're like, wait, what? what? Like, how did you turn out okay? Still asking that question myself. But yeah, they were chasing me around the house. They were like thrashing the knives at me, right? So I'm like, okay, this is maybe where I came in as a medic, where I'm like, okay, shit happens. You know what I mean? Like, accidents really do happen.
Yeah.
And my grandma had a window seal, and I was up on the window seal, and my middle sister, Erin, was just thrashing the knife, like acting like they were going to cut my legs off. And they're 4 and 6 years older than me. Like, I was in kindergarten. Like, wow. I was like, please stop, don't, you know?
Yeah.
Mom was at work. She worked at the hospital, actually. And sure enough, my sister, Erin, comes across with the knife. And my oldest sister's arm is right there, and she freaking slashes her arm. Like, had to go to the hospital, get stitches. Like, we're going to these other places, you know, like down the family friend down the road. And so I totally know what it means when you're like, oh yeah, the house was chaos. Yeah. Like, it was chaos. And we all had a plan to not tell my mom what actually happened. Like, we told her for so many years that we were unloading the dishwasher, you know, Erin reached up and accidentally slipped out of her hand because it was still wet. Like, we had great lies when we were kids.
My
absolutely
goodness.
Great
so
lies.
So when did she find out?
Oh gosh, we were probably 12 years after it actually happened. And she was like, oh, that makes sense. That's why Erin was like so upset. Like, it wasn't because she was like sad her sister got a cut. Like, she was upset
she's
the one that cut her.
She's like, I'm gonna cut you, fool. Like, she cut her. Wow.
So chaos. That's my story of chaos in the household.
Well, I feel a little bad now. I feel like I was planning all the blame on my brothers, but that reminded me of a story. I was at my grandparents' house, and my older sister and I were playing tag, and I had a shovel in my hand. And she was running after me, and I was like, get back, get back. And it just so happened that that shovel had a loose handle.
Oh, no.
And the blade just came off, hit her directly in the middle of the eyes. And till this day, there is a scar just right there. And I feel so, so bad. And I'm just so like, man, that could have been so bad if it went to the left or the right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That would have been a completely different story about what I'm saying now. But I laugh about it still.
Oh yeah, we always still laugh about it. We always tell her like she's not allowed with knives or forks or like anything. We're like, watch out for her. But that's that, right? That's what makes us who we are today.
Yeah, the siblings, man.
Gosh.
Siblings and the rivalries.
So, uncles, one police officer, one firefighter. Mm-hmm. Like, how was that to make that decision? Like, you either got guns on your hips or guns on your arms. Like, what? How do you make that choice?
Oh man. For me, I think when I got to an age where I really understood a little bit more of my personality, I was always, I just enjoyed being nice. And I felt like as a police officer, you have to be mean sometimes.
Yeah.
And enforcing rules. And I'm not a really good rule follower. I'm a terrible rule follower. My wife's a great rule follower. She will follow rules. She tells me every day, hey, you're supposed to do it this way. I'm like, yeah, but sometimes, you know, it doesn't. Rules are meant to be broken, babe. No,
yep.
No, they're not.
Yep.
But no, and so I think that's when it came down to is like, I don't want to enforce rules. I don't follow myself.
Yeah.
And so that was very obvious for me at that point to move in the direction of putting the blue stuff on the red stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what was really your first step getting into the fire service down in California? They do it so much differently than here in Idaho. Just the way that they function within those systems. Like, how did you actually get into it?
Yeah, so it was definitely a process. I think right out of high school, I got into an out-of-service fire academy to get, you know, my Firefighter 1 eligibility. So it's like a 16-week firefighter academy you go through, and you pretty much learn a whole bunch of things and get a whole bunch of certifications. And then after that, I mean, I was part of Cadets Explorer program just to get experience, interviewed all the time, and got my EMT. And then at some point, I just kind of stopped, and I pursued other ways. And part of the reason why I did stop was because actually one of my brothers, he passed away when he was 23 and I was 19, or I was 20. And that definitely shook the whole family.
Yeah.
But that also kind of helped me look in different directions of what I really pursued and what I really wanted to do. And so I got involved with a whole bunch of different things. I got involved with the church on a complete deeper level. I started putting a lot more time in working with really just poor people on Skid Row. I got involved and started a nonprofit that was fought against human trafficking, because that was something I just heard about. And so I did it within my space of the fitness industry. And I did, like, I would say, not-for-profit work for a little bit, kind of just checking myself to see, hey, is this something, even I always said I wanted to become one, but is this something I really want to do for the rest of my life? And long story short, I did decide, yeah, this is something I still have a passion for. It's what I really want to do. I want to be able to accomplish this feat, if you will.
Yeah, help and serve people, which yeah. You kind of always had that niche within there with serving for the homeless, with human trafficking, which is a crazy, overwhelming aspect yeah. that we're dealing with, you know, super. In our society.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And that still led me down, I would say, that path. But so having that few year gap, I dove right back in. I had to redo my EMT. I went straight for my paramedic license as well. Yeah, right. That was a lot of fun. And then, that was a whole nother level, though. People were strict in the spaces that I interned with and went along with. But I was fortunate to have some great teachers. And then right around that time, I got picked up because I was interviewing all over the place. Anywhere from down to San Diego, at the very least or very lowest, to all the way up to just north of San Francisco is where I travel, just wow. to interview and practice and try and get a job. But and then San Diego was the first real person, organization to pick us up or pick me up. And I was like, all right, I'm fully in. But it was through that, a lot more training, and it's been good since.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about how that organization works, because from my understanding, some of the systems down there, you work a couple days on the fire truck. Sometimes you work on the ambulance. Here in Idaho, we're separate, right? So yeah. We're not on the same rigs. You're either a firefighter, which you can be a medic and an EMT on the fire truck, mm-hmm. but our ambulance service is completely separate.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit and explain that process of like what your daily routines look like, how that changed, what your schedules were.
Yeah, so there's been some involvement through my time being with San Diego, because originally the fire department held all ambulance. We owned all the ambulance trucks. We provided the medics. We provided, the EMTs as well. And then we started moving over to single rural type of ambulance companies. And we contracted out with what was called Rural Metro. There's a couple different agencies, and they bought, sold, all kind of stuff. But slowly started giving more responsibility to a private sector. But we were still kind of both. We had the fire ambulances and private ambulances as well.
Okay.
So for the firefighters, that's when I came on, when there were still a few ambulances out there. And we would have the medics would be jumping back and forth. So we'd be having some of the fire medics who were on the box, as well as some of the fire medics on the engine. And they just go through this rotation, having to do at least, a few rotations on the box, whether it be once a month or every other rotation kind of thing, mm-hmm. I guess more clearly. And then towards the end of me being there, they actually got rid of all the ambulances with the fire department and solely left it to what is called AMR, yep. In the private sector. So now it's all the each engine, which I love. It's a four man engine crew, so they have four people, two firefighters, one engineer, one captain. Which for workload, it makes things super quick, super easy. Be able to do a lot with a single engine company when you're first on a fire.
Yeah.
But out of the two firefighters, there was always one medic and one EMT. So at every call, there should be at least one medic getting there first, which was really, I think, a great system for the community of San Diego.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, biomedics, especially around here, the fire trucks obviously don't transport the patients to the hospital.
Yeah.
That's completely separate. But what can happen is that maybe an ambulance is dealing with something completely medical, fire is not able to get there, and another call happens, right? Mm-hmm. The fire truck is able to get to the scene, start assessment, start treatment, get the ball rolling where your lag time is not as much, but it could be very generous, you know, with waiting on an ambulance.
Exactly.
Once fire gets there, they can start the process and then kind of relay that to the paramedics and EMTs on the ambulance and then kind of take it from there.
Exactly. Yes. And what was really cool too is on every like serious call or a call that needed dual medics, which there are certain criteria that if they've met or if they're in any type of critical condition, which there was criteria for, that fire medic would go with the ambulance medic on the box.
Which is so helpful, having an extra pair of hands in the back. You're like, all right, I need someone else.
Exactly. Because some of the times, you know, and some people will take it on themselves to do it all, but like you having an extra pair of hands goes a long way, especially if they seem stable at first, but then they switch.
Oh, yeah, they start crashing.
Yeah, and I've seen that quite a few times.
Yeah.
So I've always encouraged, you know, my colleagues, hey, if you have any question, don't feel bad. Like, that's what we're here for.
Right.
We will go with you.
Right.
Just because, and that's, you know, better for us. It's better customer service.
It's better for the patient, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, being in the back of the ambulance, that's a traveling ER, basically.
Exactly.
And you not only have limited supply, but you also are getting flung around by driving. I mean, some EMTs, I'm like, okay, please just take the lights off. No sirens. Like, just drive like a grandma, please. Because I've got sharp things back here. You're putting things in places that, you know, is not nice. And it just is overwhelming sometimes. So just having an extra pair of hands to hold something or to, you know, secure something makes the world of a difference.
Oh, man. Exactly. Yeah. It goes a long way.
And I think there's a, you know, the phrase paragod, you know, where some people it's totally their egos. We're like, no, I got it. And it's like, no, let me just help you. Like, I'm not taking any of your ego away. Like, it's for the patient in the end of the day. Like, that do no harm. Like, it is for the patient that this needs to happen.
Yep. Exactly.
So transitioning. Right? Mm-hmm. You're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
You, did you just quit cold turkey? Like what was your plan to transition?
Yeah. I like to say I retired.
Yeah.
Because I definitely used some of my retirement funds, but, so yeah, it wasn't necessarily cold turkey, but I got to a point, in my career where I realized, you know, where the ceiling was. And the ceiling that I was referring to is, more of a cash perspective, because initially before going into the fire service, that's all I ever wanted to do. But it went from becoming the end to a means to an end, and really being able to support my family and to be able to go on mission with my family and to invest time with my family and to do that's what I looked at it as its purpose was for. Besides me being in that job to serve, I also wanted to serve my purposes and the people that really count on me. Because at the end of the day, I knew that, hey, if I left or if I died, you know, or anything of that happened in the fire service, I would be replaced. But to my wife, to my daughter, to my kids, that would not happen.
Right.
And so I really started to count the cost when I was working, you know, 20 days out of the month. And the typical fire first schedule is around like 10 days a month. But I was working, you know, just to be able to keep up with ends meet in San Diego, which is kind of expensive.
Right.
At least 20 days out of the month. And some of those days I'd be coming home completely wrecked, just sleeping most of the day and then really only getting maybe 5 quality days out of that month with my family. And being raised in a single parent home, I realized how often my mom had to work and my dad not being present, I realized that effect it had on my sister's confidence, on my self-confidence, and just always looking, you know, for someone to follow as a father figure. And I'm glad I had other strong men in my life, because if I didn't, I feel like I would turn out a lot differently.
Who are some of those men that you have really looked up to?
Yeah, that's a great question. Honestly, it was my brothers have been pretty fundamental. You know, luckily they had more time with their father and also just more life experience. They kind of like, there's a big character trait that I looked for. Like one thing I always notice is my oldest brother, who's always very, very respectful. And so he would always take things with integrity, honor, and respecting people. So that was something I really wanted to seek after because I respected that of him, regardless of the situation. Like he always did things the right way. And my brother Jules, he was a very sacrificial individual. So even like, it's crazy because I got myself into some trouble.
Never down there. Right.
And so I got an opportunity to talk to, well, he came down to talk to me and was like, hey man, you're putting your family in the trouble that you're seeking.
Yeah.
And you know, at the end of the day, he asked me, Michael, what have you sacrificed? And I was like, man, I didn't have anything to say to that. But what's crazy is like the trouble I put my family in, I caused my family to go in debt because of things that I did. And my brother, he died a week after that conversation. And that was the last words he spoke to me was, Michael, what have you sacrificed?
Wow.
And at that, what was pretty crazy about that is just the insurance money that came from his death ended up paying all the debt that I had caused my family. Wow. So, and at some, it felt like almost a sucker punch, if you will, just acknowledging, wow, bro, like even in death, you're still, you know, it's thinking ahead, you know, in such of a way where you have a death benefit that is given to your family.
Right.
And that was something that really definitely shook me in terms of like, all right, you know, what are you doing for your family? You know, and now I think I apply that a lot more to my immediate family. And, but I would say as a role model, you know, those two men were huge. And there was other things I learned from other men I would try to, you know, pick and choose if I could, you know, for my uncles, my grandfather, my Jewish father is what I call him. and, you know, and just really had a fight to find out who are reputable men and who do I want to look like when I grow up.
Yeah. So that transition, your role models, you really decided that being a firefighter down in San Diego was not who you wanted to continue to be. You're working 20 days out of the month. You wanted your time with your family, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people as first responders, that's why we get into it, is because they're like, oh, I'm going to work 2 days a week and I'm going to have all this time off. Like, how great is that? Like, boom, you get your 48 hours done. You have the whole rest of the week, you know, off, but you're getting paid at such a low amount.
Yeah.
That your days aren't off. You're working somebody else, you know, somewhere else, trying to make that up.
Yep. I don't think a lot of people realize that. I feel like a lot of people think that, you know, oh, you must get taken care of really well. You must get paid bank. And don't get me wrong. There's money in some of these departments, but I mean, but to be quite like frank, it just depends on where you live and what your habits are, what your spending habits are. I mean, in regards to us, and to be honest, I still wanted to stay with the fire service for quite a few more years, but we just had an opportunity that we saw and we just took it. So we jumped, but.
What was that opportunity?
Oh man.
Michael.
So, and that, I think that was really just, so our plan was, we bought two assisted living facilities, which was a crazy story in and of itself. And that was like our first, besides wholesaling, our first introduction to real estate, was these old folks homes. And the plan was to come here, build it out, get it running by itself, systemize it, move back to San Diego, continue my fire job, all that kind of stuff. Didn't work out that way. In fact, we actually made some pretty decent money for the assisted living. We started marketing it well. We had better processes for it, but we weren't fully owners just quite yet. And in that, also in that process of doing so, we realized we love Idaho.
Yeah.
Like, love the outdoors. Like, love going, the people are so kind, so much slower paced. Like, this was nice. Mm-hmm. It was real nice.
In what year was this?
2019.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, right? Yes.
I'm like, I don't know. That's why I asked you.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that really gave a perspective change and you know, what we want for a family and just the affordability, actually being able to afford a house out here at the time. I don't know anymore, but
I was going to say at that time, I like how you use that past tense.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, so I think it was, and what was hard too, is because I was commuting back and forth to San Diego. So I was working for a couple weeks out there, be home for a couple weeks. But it definitely got to a point where I was like, all right, well, this is still hurting my family. I'm not home. My daughter is starting not to recognize me at times. And I need to make a choice and remember what my why is and what kind of father and husband I want to be.
Yeah.
To them.
Yeah. So. What is your big why? Like, why did you want to say, hey, I need to reevaluate myself, my core values? Like, why did you do that?
I mean, to be honest, I feel kind of selfish in saying this, but like, I just really love them. Like, aww. Like I feel like I can think back to, right, like I can say where it started. Like, yes, I saw these examples. I saw what it was to not have a father around, and you know, and I saw what it was to have a single parent. But at the same time, that's all I knew.
Yeah,
like I didn't know what I didn't know. It was all I. It,
that's what your environment was there.
Exactly. It was completely normal to me. But it wasn't until now, like thinking back and realizing, and, you know, I was going through a lot of like, of this, this like, what do you call it? It's like, you know, one of those self-help books, if you will.
Yeah.
But, and it was talking about trauma, and the reason why we go to certain addictions or things like that is a lot of times there's a trauma, you know, in your past that relates to that. And I was thinking, man, like, okay, like, I don't necessarily see how I had any trauma as a past kid, but when this author started speaking about the love that he had for his son, he was bawling because his son got hit with a foul ball and big swelling. He's going to the hospital, was completely unconscious, wasn't waking up, and his father was bawling for him. And I was reading that story, I was like, man, that was really touching. And I was thinking, well, I don't have any trauma. But then I was thinking in the regards of it, because I had mentioned to you that I was always looking, besides my brothers, always looking, okay, who's the father figure I can follow?
Yeah.
And I realized I just wanted to be loved. Like, and simple as it was, I wanted to be loved by another man who loved me without compromise, without any other type of thing. And that is definitely a deep-seated thing, but coming to, like, now and making this decision now, I'm like, well, my why is, be honest, I just love, like, and I think there's a place of that, but I really, really selfishly love my wife. I selfishly love my daughter. Like, I don't want to spend another day without them. You know, I hate when I would cry every single time. I'm such a crybaby.
Oh.
But I would cry every single time when I left, like, here to go work over there for 2 weeks because I couldn't imagine being without them for 2 weeks.
Because you have been without that person.
Yeah.
And you know that trauma, even if you didn't recognize it as that name.
Yeah.
You understood at a young age what it was like to not have somebody be there and to not have somebody to be looking up to. Mm. And that's the one thing that you stuck onto and said, I don't want to be that person. You know, I want to be the father that my daughter does know. And I want to be the person that my wife can, you know, if she's going through something, I'm there for her.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's selfishly that you love them. I think it really comes from that void you're trying to fill from what you didn't have as a kid. And I think we all are, you know. Yeah. I think we really are all trying to make our lives better from what we didn't have as kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's nothing against our parents or the way that we were raised, because they're also trying to do the best that they have with the situation that they are in. Your mom being a single mom and working her ass off for you kids, you know?
Yeah.
She, you know, look at what her mom was like. Maybe her mom didn't work, or, you know, we start looking backwards at these things, and every generation is just trying to fix something, is just trying to fill that void with something. And I commend you for finding a wife that you love that much and being there for your kids, because some people don't recognize that. Some people do not recognize that they need to change something, right? With you and your brother and that debt you were in, you could have gone out and done the exact same thing, but there was a trigger in you. There was something deeper in you that said, this is what I don't want to be like, so I need to change something. And even changing from coming from California to Idaho, like, that's a big, big, big change, not only for you, but your wife and your kids, and making that life for them. So I really do commend you for recognizing that and that self-awareness and looking inward and saying, hey, I need this. Like, as a human, I need their love. I think a lot of people need a lot more love out there.
Yeah, amen.
And kindness that. And, you know, like, that's what made me start this podcast, was like, why not share people's stories? Like, you know, you do great with your asset management. You know, you're always killing it out there, like, always forging forward. But some people also need to hear, like, what it was like growing up in your shoes and understanding a little bit more, and understanding people are just trying to get through fucking life.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I really commend you on looking inward and understanding what you needed to change and filling that void and being there for your wife and kids.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like sometimes we forget our why, because we're just so focused on what will help us achieve our why. So that becomes the object of what we are running towards. But a lot of times it's nice to be able to, like, reflect and I guess hash these things out in an atmosphere like this, because you're like, oh, resurfacing everything that's that kind of is, I'd say, like, the starting place, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, it makes you who you are.
Mm-hmm.
All of those situations, all of those processes that you've gone through, that's why you are here today.
Yeah.
That is why you are the person you are here today.
Yep.
You know, and I think people want to completely just overlook it, not deal with it, you know, completely just suppress it. And then that starts a whole nother chaos. That starts a whole nother whirlwind of emotions and addictions and, you know, negative coping skills versus positive coping skills.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah. Absolutely.
So we kind of went on a tangent from
I love tangents.
Kind of went on a deep tangent from like getting here, your retirement homes. So that, do you still have them? Like, what was after that? Oh,
we washed our hands of that. Man, that was at the end of 2020. We stopped doing that, and we realized it wasn't fun. It still was doing pretty well, but, you know, we were also in business with the previous owner, who kind of brought with a lot of the baggage of where we kind of picked it up from. So we just decided we wanted to do business that way, nor did we want to do business in assisted living. Just to be honest, it was kind of depressing. A lot of death that also surrounded by workers who maybe weren't the most honest. However, it was definitely encouraging to see a lot of people, you know, still do the right thing and be amazing workers and really care for their tenants, you know, who really needed help.
Mm-hmm.
but we end up moving from that space to short-term rental space. And that kind of started off with our own private home. We decided we wanted to house hack right off the bat when we first bought our house. And the idea was first to go into as a long-term rental. So we had this bonus room that we separated from our house and wanted to rent it out. Thought we could save some money on our mortgage. Mortgage was like about $1,800, and long-term rent for that little like studio space would have been about $800. And someone gave us the idea of turning into an Airbnb. I was like, oh, it's not a bad idea. I mean, it's not what I want to do, but all right. So put a little extra money into it. And the first month we made maybe $3,000 from it. And we're like, wow.
Wow.
This works. And so, you know, we had some success from some of our other real estate ventures, and we were on a little vacation in Florida. And we just asked ourselves the question, man, wouldn't it be really cool and rad to own real estate where we went to vacation?
Yeah, it would be.
So we started down that short-term rental space kind of with that thought in mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are you doing with that business now?
That's a great question. So I have that one business, which was more of an acquisition business, has turned into three. So the acquisition business, we looked at these different areas, places where we can give value to properties and do some value add and turn them into short-term rentals. And from there, we did a few, and we realized as we're turning them into short-term rentals, well, to get best income back, we need property managers. And so we started managing them ourselves and building teams out, doing it, you know, from out of state. And then, you know, once we kind of figured out, well, that's pretty cool. Maybe we could offer this service to other people. So we created our second company of managing short-term rentals from out of state. So we manage in three different areas. Now it's in Idaho, Florida, and Virginia.
Wow.
And we specifically only do short-term rentals and got pretty good at it. But then I was invited to speak in Quarter Lane on how to invest out of state with short-term rentals. And I thought, well, that's kind of far. What would make it worth it for me to go up there?
It's beautiful.
It is gorgeous. We love it. I mean, to be honest, I was like, yeah, I love Coeur d'Alene.
Beautiful. You don't need any more reason than that.
No. We have this picture in our living room that's like just me, my wife, and my daughter are on top of this mountain, this lake, Coeur d'Alene, just
oh, beautiful.
All background. It's gorgeous. So gorgeous. But yeah, love that space. But then, so I was like, all right, well, maybe if I were to sell like a course or some type of coaching program that I could teach them how to do this. And it's like, all right, I'll do that. And so I developed a quick like, hey, maybe it's a 6-week course that I'll release each module each week. So I was like, I got to make it up as I go. That's how I started.
You sound like me. I'll figure it out while we go.
Exactly. We'll build a parachute on the way down. And yeah, so I just wigged it and started speaking, and I taught on the three principles of what I search by, which is rental demand, which is, I mean, I always say the demand is always greater than the brand, meaning you can have a crappy product and a crappy brand, but if the demand is high enough, you're going to get it sold.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so they always say, well, how do you sell water? Look for the thirsty crowd. Yeah. So that is something that one of the things that I look for when it comes to rentals, then I look for revenue growth because I want to see trends that are growing upward for long-term investments. And I also look at the cash on cash return. So am I paying $1 million to make 50, or am I paying $100,000 to make 50?
Right.
I taught on those principles. I taught on the data that where I look, and I taught on how to do it with little or no money down. I think about 10% of the room end up accepting my offer at the end and became my first students in the beta version. And that kind of proved to me that, hey, this is a viable thing that people want. So I started my own coaching program from that original group. And since it's transformed, we have a, you know, do it yourself version, which is you just take the course, you follow the action steps that's in the course and do it yourself. There's a do it with you which is involves me coaching, and I kind of hold your hand through the whole process, walking you through the data, how to read things.
Wow.
And then there's a Done For You, which is our newest program, because I ran into a lot of people who do not have the time, like right. doctors, lawyers, people, and they're like, hey, I just want an investment that makes this much that you said. So, you know, that's where I go and put in the work, and usually it's like maybe a 3-month turnaround time. And so I had one person take me up on the offer so far, and that's kind of the first person we're working with, which is fun. But
nice.
Yeah. So it's,
so are you looking into the markets, the revenues, like what markets are you looking into? Because I mean, selling real estate, Boise really has kind of, you know, outgrown even some of our investors
yeah.
because it just doesn't make sense, right? Yeah. The prices that you're paying for the homes in the cash return, our demand is high, absolutely, especially in the rental space because yeah. people can't get into homes.
Yeah.
But the price you're paying up front is way different than some of our other markets, you know, in the US. So how do you find those markets?
Yeah. Great question. So, and just to touch on the Boise market, like, and that's one thing, it's you really have to define what you're investing for. So like the Boise market right now is maybe not great for cash flow, but it's great for appreciation. And you know, that's what a lot of people will do with stocks, and what they invest is they're looking for the appreciation. So there's definitely value in that. But what we look for is we try to get a little bit of both, and we love cash flow because that kind of allows you to keep the property as long as possible. So the way we look is, I originally started investing in this data from AirDNA. So there's three different data sources that we look at: AirDNA, MatchVisor, and Key Data. They all pull their sources from different sources. Like AirDNA pulls from Airbnb and Vrbo. MatchVisor only pulls from Airbnb, and then Key Data pulls from property managers in large markets, which okay. kind of gets all the bookings and everything. It's probably the most accurate out there. But with AirDNA, we bought a data package. It's about $5,000. At least that's what the quote they gave me after I whittled them down as much as I could. and I'm very fine being completely honest and true. So if they give you a higher price, just keep whittling them down. But it cost $5,000 to get like the top 3,000 cities in the United States that were based off of some of those factors.
Okay.
And that allowed me to see cities that I could filter through that would have certain of those qualities, like rental demand, revenue growth, and cash on cash return.
The criteria that you're really looking for.
Exactly. And then I partnered with a friend of mine, which what he did is he was able to sort through that data pretty easily with his little software guy. And he's like, okay, well, these are the most important things I think that I want to see in this data, because it takes a long time to sift through 3,000 cities.
Yeah.
But I'm like, hey, man, just give me where I can get the best cash on cash return with the highest demand, you know, in that order. And then we can work on the revenue growth side and I can look at that myself. But I want at least this many active rentals in that space, because some of these areas were like, you know, 15 rentals or 30 rentals.
Wow.
That's in the very small markets, which is kind of a little more risky because there's not a whole lot of inventory and there's not a whole lot of comps you can use from. But when you see something that's maybe around that 500 active rentals, that's a little more safer. And that's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see something in those numbers. So we developed some software that allowed us to see it in that kind of way, which has been super helpful for me to find these markets.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. So with the courses, you're also teaching people locally, right?
Yep.
I'm actually coming to one. Woo woo. So excited. It's just great knowledge. So
yeah.
So within all of this, what's next? I mean, you're doing these courses,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. So what's next is, I mean, to be honest, I think I want to just, as of right now, I'm in a growth phase. I like working. I think it's we're made to work. If we weren't working, it'd be something to be, what would you do? But I like doing it with my time in mind, making sure that I'm kind of sticking to my original whys. So as long as that still plays out, I get excited about it. So that looks like, I mean, for me, it's learning on how to grow consistently the same path, but still allowing it in a certain time frame, and allowing time for me, my wife, and my children for us to go still travel and, you know, go on mission and spend and really do this all together. And that was, and really, so like a part of our why of our mission statement, if you will, it's we want to pursue freedom for me and my family in four different ways. We want to do it, you know, spiritually, relationally, physically, and financially. We want to be able to just go where we want to go, invest where we want to invest, you know, build up what we want to build up, serve who we want to serve, and just really just live life on our own terms. That gets us excited.
Yeah, absolutely. I always tease people. I went from working 48 hours a week to I work 24/7 now.
Yep. Working for someone else 24 hours or 48 hours to myself all the time.
Yes. But, you know, like, I absolutely love it because I can be on vacation and do a quick email or take a phone call. Yeah. And that is so much more valuable to me than waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning for something random or 3 o'clock, you know, and then now you're missing things. And
don't miss those days.
Right. I know. I'm like people from my past are like, oh, don't you miss EMS? I'm like, no, I sleep at night and I don't have like night terrors and like. It is fantastic.
Did I miss a call?
Yeah. Like, honestly, I don't know if I would wake up if I had to go. You know, you just like, you're sleep deprived. Yeah. I mean, people talk about like kids. I'm like, I don't even have kids and I was sleep deprived at my job, right?
Yeah.
I totally, you know, the financial freedom, the freedom to be able to do what you want with your quality time of your family.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Mm. Absolutely outstanding. So how can my followers, how can your followers get in touch with you? How can they help you out becoming, you know, that financial freedom for you, that, you know, family quality time for you, invest with you, take your courses? Like, what does that look like? How do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so there's a couple different ways. One would be michaelporch.com. My name in short. But that's kind of like more of our businesses and what we do, but then there's also specifically for the vacation rental space and the, you know, Airbnb short-term rental, if that's something that interests them and that kind of space, it's strlegacies.com. So strlegacies.com. It also has like a free little masterclass that's attached to it, just teaching what I taught in that one class when I went up north, and it's all about, you know, rental demand, revenue growth, investability, and then going into what data and how to look through it, and then how to do it with little or no money down. But yeah, that's strlegacies.com. That'll get to me. michaelporch.com. That'll get to me.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, as we wrap everything up, I just want to thank you for your time, your knowledge, your life experiences, coming on the podcast, helping me out as well. How can the local people, like, are you going to be doing any local classes? I know I'm going to one here shortly.
Yeah.
Like, what does that look like?
So we have, so we do have like a first responder one that we just mentioned, and that was probably one you're referring to, but that's like just a little real estate meetup group that we wanted to reach out to people who've been in the first responder, you know, world, life, career, and just be able to network one another for investing. That's a local thing that we're doing, and that's a once a month thing. But to be honest, you could probably find me, man, what's the coffee shop I love going to? I always love like the downtown coffee shops, but I don't live close to downtown. So
A Cafe is my favorite. Flying M downtown.
So you know the
pour.
Spots.
Oh, yeah.
You know the Push and Pour I've been. That's like probably the only one. But
Form and Function is fantastic.
And Form and Function. I've been there. That's a good one. That's super classy. I feel like it's super basic with the colors.
Yep.
And just super clean.
It's very refreshing because it's so minimalist.
Yeah, that's it.
You're like, there's not all these things on the wall. Like, I love Flying M if you want to get distracted, because you'll get distracted on anything.
Really quick.
Like, I was actually just at Flying M in Nampa earlier today. But, like, you find the coolest, like, just little shenanigans. You're like, oh, I didn't know I needed this, but I need this, you know? It's the best.
Yeah.
It's the best.
But yeah, you can, it's just those, I guess, local meetup groups, and that's something, I mean, no, we don't have a name for it just yet. We're still working on that, but what else am I locally? I'm at the CrossFit gym over at you know, what's it called?
River.
Snake River.
Yeah.
Snake River CrossFit. So that's in Nampa. That's being led by Frank and Matt.
Michaela. Yeah, Matt.
Yeah. And then so that's, you'll definitely see me there at 6:30 every morning or 9:30. But depending on the day, but yes.
Perfect. Well, once again, I want to thank you for coming on to the show, all of your knowledge. Followers, if you share this podcast with tagging Raw Thoughts and Michael Porsche, you will actually get entered into a giveaway. So love sharing the knowledge, love getting that out there. So make sure you share it, screenshot it, tell your friends if they want to look into investing. It's a great option to get passive income, to live your life freely, and do what you really want to do. And that really comes down to your why. So thank you, Michael, and I appreciate it.
So much.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah. Thank you for tuning into the show today. Your feedback is very important to me. If you could leave a review as well as follow me on Instagram at rawthoughts.podcast and email in at m.rawthoughts@gmail.com if you have any guest suggestions.